right now on Current State.
I love Lansing. I think Lansing has phenomenal bones.
We'll talk with a Lansing council member hoping to move into the mayor's office. A new beginning for an historic part of Lansing. Find out what will be built on the Michigan School for the Blind campus.
Another would actually allow parents to eavesdrop on their kids' phone calls.
And Capitol correspondent Shayna Roth tells us what your state lawmakers will be working on when they return from summer break. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. From Michigan State University, you're listening to 90.5 FM WKAR. And this is Current State. We start with the race to replace Virge Brennero as mayor of Lansing. Councilmember Judy Brown Clark and State Representative Andy Shore survived the primary and are now focused on winning in November. Both are Democrats. Brown Clark is a councilwoman, wife of Judge Hugh Clark, and mother of three. She won the silver medal in the 400-meter hurdles at the 1984 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles, and now she is in a tough mayoral race. You will hear an extended interview with her in a moment. But first, a little bit of what her opponent, Andy Shore, had to say last weekend.
Civility in government. There's been a lot of divisiveness within the city council and between the city council and mayor. And we're talking about, you know, moving forward together, working with city council regardless of faction, and really getting things done for Lansing pretty quickly.
Joining us now is Lansing City Council member and mayoral candidate Judy Brown Clark. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
You came in second in the August 8th primary. What is your campaign go from here? Where does it go from here?
So my campaign moving forward is, number one, you get past the primary and then everything resets back to zero. So what I know that I resonate with a large population that are not necessarily primary voters. And so a real part of our strategy is making sure that my base actually shows up and votes at the polls. So a lot of making sure we're breaking down barriers and making sure we're encouraging individuals and making sure they're at the polls in November.
If elected mayor of Lansing, what would be your first priority or set of priorities?
My initial priorities are to identify those things that are working very well within the city and sustain and give them, free range to continue. And then look at where we have opportunities to really enhance some of the challenges that are happening across the city. So my first challenge, obviously, would be looking at roads and infrastructure at the doors. That is like the number one thing that everyone commonly sees as an issue. And then secondarily, look at workforce development. There's going to be some cuts with our federal budgets and our pass-through through local dollars. So seeing what that looks like and what kind of redistribution of our resources we'll need to make sure that we're maintaining the services across Lansing.
On council, we observed there's a lot of back and forth going, especially with the current mayor, Virge Brennero, and sometimes with each other. How would you help unify the council or work with them as mayor?
So there's two parts to that question. Number one, there's the privy of open meetings. Open meetings means that you have the opportunity to listen to the discourse. And people see that as bickering. It's no different than at your table, if you were going to pick what movie you were going to go to. People are going to advocate for their movie. And then ultimately, when you come to a consensus, it sounds like there's bickering and so on. But, you know, if you're an at-large candidate or at-large member, you look at it from a whole city perspective. If you're a ward member, you look at it from your ward perspective. Well, many times that's not going to align. And so when we're going back and forth and we're trying to, you know, lay out our argument related to why we're going to vote on something or trying to recruit somebody to see it our way, that's seen as actual dysfunction. And that's actual functioning. And so it really is frustrating to me when people are privy to that because of the, you know, other meetings that would happen in a closed door. But because we're open meetings, you have the privy of seeing it. That's not dysfunction. That is quite frankly functioning.
We're talking with Lansing mayoral candidate Judy Brown Clark. There also seems to be feelings in wards 2 and 4 that all the money goes downtown. So what do you say to that? You know, what do you tell people who live in those areas?
I look at it, I'm at large. I look at it citywide, and I have the ability to multitask. There's a tremendous amount of our efforts that focuses on the Michigan corridor. We have other corridors. And so I think what we need to do in this holistic way is look at how are we developing, because different aspects of the city will develop at different pace, and they have different things that leverage that kind of weight where you put your efforts. But our ability to look at the Michigan corridor, as well as looking at, you know, each of the four wards, and in particular, I think that the sweet spot for the city is quite frankly 1 and 3, because you're coming right off of 96. And so that's where the trade winds are. So if you want to develop businesses, you really want to do it off the South Corridor, because you're coming right off of 96, you do your business, you go right back on. And that is an incredibly underutilized area of the city, I think, that just is low-hanging fruit.
Last May, WKAR produced a week-long series on marijuana in Michigan. Our lead story was the interesting system of licensing and regulating medical marijuana in Lansing. Mm-hmm. So how would, in your on council now, how would you handle that as mayor?
Well, being on city council right now, I've actually been one of the drafters of the ordinance that we're actually just had a public hearing on last Monday, and this upcoming Monday we'll actually start to look at some of the feedback from what that ordinance in its draft form. So I'm looking at, you know, fair and equitable. This is a business development. I want to make sure I'm fair and equitable to the businesses. I also want for patient care that we have, you know, safe products and access so that our patients have the ability to get it. But it also has, you know, safeguards so they're getting a product that has quality control to it.
So how do you feel about the current ordinance? I know there was a public hearing last week.
Right.
That's kind of before, that's moving through right now.
That's correct. So that ordinance is one that I've had my fingerprints all over. So that's, so of course I like it. But, you know, again, when you make something, when you put something out for draft form, you're looking for feedback and you want to find out, you know, where are there weaknesses within it. So I absolutely love that we're moving this process forward and we're going to hear from the patients, from the businesses, from the public, and from us legislatively, you know, what needs to be fixed on it so that we can actually put something on the books before the end of this year.
What is the biggest challenge Lansing faces?
Some of the biggest challenges, or the number one challenge, I think, is going to be financial. There's sort of major cuts that are happening federally, and through the pass-through through state, we're going to have less dollars that we use for, we call it CDBG, which is a community development block grant, but that's workforce development, that's financial empowerment, that's what we use specifically for dollars for our county types of health care. Those are quality of life, in particular, people that are vulnerable. And with that stress on those dollars, we've got to then look within other budget lines to slide dollars over. So there's going to be some major redistribution of funding that's going to occur next year. And so when we get these final numbers in September, starting October 1st, I think that people are going to have a very rude awakening as to what our financial health looks like across the city and across this nation.
What makes Lansing special to you and your family?
I love Lansing. I think Lansing has phenomenal bones. You know, we're sitting here with being the state capital, and that's, you know, you have your hand on the pulse of all the legislation that's occurring across the state. We have all the higher education institutions that encompass us. So we have, you know, Michigan State, LCC, Cornerstone, Davenport, you know, Cooley Law School, Michigan State Law School. I mean, so we have all these incredible brain trust of capacity. We're blue collar and white collar. We've got, you know, GM, we've got, you know, Jackson National. So we have all the core capacities. What we need to do is just leverage them in a way in which we move ourselves forward.
What do you think of President Trump and the leadership from the White House?
And so I go back to sport. So for me, you know, he's the president. And what we have to do is, it's not so much focusing on him as a person, is we have to focus on the functioning of our national government. We have to focus on what it looks like from a state perspective and local perspective. There's local control. So what we can and can't control, we can't control national politics, but we can control our state politics, and we absolutely can control our local politics. So when you look at what you can and can't control, his success is our success. There is no us and them. You know, the success in Washington directly affects our quality of life as a nation. And so his failure is our failure as a nation, and it can't occur. So irrespective of whether, you know, our positions align, our ability to watch him fail is our ability to watch us to look in the mirror. And so the way I look at it has nothing to do with him. It has to do with how do we keep this nation in a way in which we empower it and keep it centered and being functional and moving forward.
Is it easier to prepare and run in the Olympics or for mayor?
I had a lot more control running in the Olympics. I knew exactly what my plan was. I had my lane. And in this one, there's different rewards. What's really interesting in sport is, you know, your performance speaks for itself. And what I find in politics is very different what's rewarded. And it's not always competency. And so it really comes with looking at the rules and figuring out what is being leveraged in a way in which it best serves the public, but also it's packaged in a way in which it's rewarded. And so I know that's kind of a convoluted way of answering, but it's very linear in track. It's very linear in sport. It's not so linear in politics. It's very much a different system of reward and who progresses and while. There's a lot of privilege. There's a lot of ism and is, and I'll be very candid about that.
Well, thank you, mayoral candidate Judy Brown Clark. And we talked with your opponent, State Representative Andy Shore, last week. And you can read up on both of these candidates on WKAR.org.
Thank you so much.
Time to talk about what's happening around the Capitol with our Capitol correspondent, Shayna Roth.
Hello, Reginald. Thank you for having me.
First, let's talk about the lawmakers. They're about to come back from break.
Yeah, so they've been gone for a couple months. They took their summer recess. They were back for a day about a week ago. And during that time, a few of them introduced a couple of different bills. So there's some things that we might be seeing this session, an early indicator there. Some of the interesting ones included making citizenship a requirement for financial aid and legislative merit scholarship awards. Another bill would exempt certain interns from wage laws. And another would expand the insanity defense to include misdemeanor offenses. And another would actually allow parents to eavesdrop on their kids' phone calls. A lot of people, I didn't even know this, that it is apparently illegal for parents to listen in on their kids' phone calls. And one lawmaker says, you know what, we need to fix that. Parents need to be able to keep track of what their kids are doing. Another thing is that the Democrats this past week rolled out a plan that they say is going to prevent price gouging on prescription medication. They have not introduced that bill package yet. They're going to be introducing it in the fall. And they're basically saying, you know, prescription medication, the prices are way too high. There's not enough oversight of that. So they have a plan that they say is going to, you know, put more accountability and more transparency when it comes to these pharmaceutical companies. And there is also talk that there might be a veto override. So lots of interesting things to look for in the fall when they get back this upcoming week.
And not only are the lawmakers back, public schools are getting back, and there's some movement there, especially around third graders.
Yeah, so it's interesting. This year, for the first time, there's going to be a new third grade. It's called like the third grade reading law. And what it is it's increasing literacy tests and reading tests for grades kindergarten through third grade. The idea is that, you know, kindergarten through third grade, those are the most integral when it comes to, you know, developing literacy and making sure that students can read. And this was a bill package that, you know, was somewhat controversial last year. There were some changes that were made to it and was really a big deal last year. And so this is the first time we're going to see it put into effect. And one of the big kind of like sticking points for it is that the bill would allow for if students are not meeting those literacy requirements, they're not passing the tests like they should, that they can get held back a grade. And a lot of lawmakers were concerned about that. So now there's a mechanism in the bill where a superintendent can come in and say, you know what, we don't need to hold this student back. Another interesting thing when it comes to schools that came up this past week is a study done by the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. That's a free market think tank over in Midland. They found that, you know, every year more public schools are using private contractors for things like transportation, food services, and custodial work. And they argue, you know, this is a great thing because if you, you know, use a private company to bring in these services, it's cheaper, it's more convenient. But then there's other people who criticize that. And, you know, they basically say that, you know, by not having that accountability between the school and the employee, that you're getting substandard services.
We are already looking ahead to the next election, of course.
Of course.
Talking in 2018, we have a new Secretary of State candidate.
We do. Stan Grote, rhymes with boat. He is he has thrown his hat in the ring for the GOP nomination. He is so far going up against State Senator Mike Kowal. And what's interesting about these announcements for things like Secretary of State and Attorney General is the public is not actually going to vote on these people necessarily. The final nominees are chosen during a party convention next year. So the people like Republicans are not, you know, everyday Republicans are not going to get a choice between Stan Grote or Mike Kowal. They're going to get, you know, are they going to vote Republican or Democrat? So it's interesting when they have these big rollouts and announcing that they are running for this to kind of as an individual, it's kind of like, well, why are you doing that? But one of the reasons is to kind of, you know, get that name recognition out there and really show those delegates that are going to be choosing their nominees. Hey, look it, I can bring people in, I can bring votes in, I'm the candidate that you want. So it's kind of a dual courtship, if you will.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing us up to date. Shayna Roth, you hear her weekday mornings on Morning Edition between 5 and 9 a.m. and on All Things Considered every afternoon between 4 and 7 p.m.
Thank you so much for having me.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bone. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
New development is underway at an historic campus west of Old Town Lansing. WKAR's Katie Cook reports it's being transformed into a fresh start for people who cannot afford to pay the market rate for apartments.
The Walnut Park Apartments Project is an affordable housing complex that will be built on the campus of the former Michigan School for the Blind. Dozens gathered on site Thursday morning to hear remarks from Mayor Virg Brunero, the Witsit Group development team, and other stakeholders, and to watch demolition begin on the auditorium. Once finished, the $12.5 million project will include 8 market rate and 64 affordable housing units, as well as a community room, business center, fitness room, outdoor playground, and a Lansing Police Department substation. Mayor Virg Brunero spoke about the history of the site and about what gentrification can mean for a neighborhood.
What it can mean is that some people are getting left behind, and we don't want that to happen. And that's why I am such a big proponent, and the folks up here are such big proponents of affordable housing, because we want economic progress and prosperity to reach everybody. We want everybody to have a chance.
Starting next summer, the historic Abigail Building on the school's campus will also be transformed into affordable apartment units for seniors. The entire project is expected to be completed by October 2018. For WKAR News, I'm Katie Cook.
How many times have you read a Facebook post or heard an argument and wonder, does anyone listen to each other anymore? Especially when the topic is race. This week we launched a series called My Voice. No shouting, no arguing. Just listening to 5 of your Michigan neighbors of diverse backgrounds share their perspectives on a topic. And this week it was race and ethnicity. Over the next few minutes you will hear from all 5 of our panelists. They'll reveal their race or ethnicity and tell us what they think is misunderstood about people who share their heritage.
My name is Ashley Bell, born and raised here, lived in Lansing my whole life. African American, Irish, German, Egyptian. When people kind of make comments or question in certain ways, such as saying, oh, you know, you could pass for white, as if it's a compliment. I understand what they're saying because I have a light complexion, but it's almost as if it's not good enough and that they're trying to give me a compliment by saying that's the ultimate level or standard of beauty. But I feel like there's not necessarily a standard. I think it should all be celebrated. Every race should be celebrated.
Well, my name is Ariana Kwan. I am Korean. I grew up for the first 6 years in Beijing, and then I moved here and just moving around all over. Yeah, within Michigan, though. Always Michigan. For me, being an Asian American female, just the fact that we're not extremely docile, we're not sexual objects, and we're not submissive people. We have personalities, and we're extremely driven. And for some reason, that's always been a huge obstacle.
I'm Justin Sheehan. I am white, Caucasian, Irish, and grew up here in Lansing. There's a term that is used often in white privilege. And I think I fear that white privilege often equates in people's minds to white guilt. White privilege, in my experience, has been, and I'm only speaking in my experience, because there are some white folks who have experienced nothing that I'm about to say, but they have received either benefit or at least have not been negatively affected or have not had to think about their race when going in for a job interview, into the store, experiencing life. That's been my experience. Again, there are issues of socioeconomic and income that affect that. There are issues of where you're from in a neighborhood that affect that. So there's no bright line rule. But the concept that I have to go out of my way to understand, or at least to experience most forms of injustice, tell me that I have a privilege. Within that, I think folks often jump to the next step of the concept of white guilt, which is I have a responsibility or a privilege, but I didn't make this myself, and therefore you can't hold me accountable to it. Or there's a fear there that I think stops conversations. It's been my experience when people can understand the filter that we all use, which is our own experience and our own life, maybe based on our skin color or not, but then the opportunity we have and the responsibility we have with that privilege. And so I am a white male. I'm an attorney, and I run a nonprofit. I have opportunities to make change and to make difference, and I have a responsibility to do so based on my position and place in life.
My name's Clara Martinez. Chicana is my ethnic group, and I was born in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I would say in the Midwest, sometimes people don't always make the distinction between, you know, someone might be Puerto Rican, that doesn't mean they eat Mexican food all the time, or someone might be Chicano or Chicana, but that doesn't mean they eat Peruvian food all the time, you know? So I think it's just sometimes it's the most tangible thing people can see, and they don't spend any further time trying to understand and going deeper into knowing who you are within your own group and as a person. As a, you know, second generation Chicana, not everybody in my generation is bilingual, and I understand a lot of Spanish, but I don't speak a lot of Spanish. So intergenerationally, there are some large differences too about how we communicate. And so people might assume that I speak really eloquent Spanish when really I am pretty timid about it sometimes.
Well, my name is Juwan Clark. I am a black male from Detroit, Michigan. I would say the least understood for African Americans is that although times are changing, we still have to look at where we came from and the history that we have behind us. Like, of course, now we have equal education, but sometimes it's not equal education in our eyes. We always see that a person of a different race always have an upper advantage over us, and that we always have to succeed, because being in the classes that I've been in, it was like either I was the only black male in the class or I was the only black person overall. So it's always like the black person in that class, they're always going to have their name known, because, you know, that's just having that attention on you is going to show you that you need to work harder, you need to push harder, and you need to succeed in your education and just do your best, because you have all these people watching you and expecting people, like people are expecting you to fail. So having all that attention on you, people need to know, like, I'm going to have to succeed because this is what I came to do. This is what I have to do to prove a not only prove a point, but to satisfy yourself in what you need to do. We only got
one word. If you would like to be part of a future My Voice, email me at rhardwicks@wkar.org and tell me what you'd like to talk about. And we'll be right back with the next half hour of our show. Man, you gotta have love to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all. People killing, people dying, children hurt, and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek?